So we have a small group today, continue our practice. You know, in the time of the Buddha, you know, when there is sometimes the Buddha practiced by himself. And, and sometimes with very few students, sometimes very large audience. So the same thing out of practice. Sometimes we have small groups, sometimes we have big groups. But the practice has to be steady, you know, and in our practice. So whether it's more or big, we still practicing this. So last time, last week we talked, each one of you practice how you practice. So this week I would like to continue the Four Noble Truths that we have been studying. The first one, what is the first one? So if someone was asked, what is the first Noble Truth?
The existence of suffering.
The results of suffering. So the Buddha talked about the result of the suffering first. And now, with the second Noble Truth we have talking about 2 weeks ago. So what is that? What is the second Noble Truth? Sometimes we have to memorize some of terminology so that when, and then from there we can start out. Because, you know, we have as a sentient beings, we have a tendency to forget easily. And even our practice. So we have to memorize some of the small things so that can remind us of the practice. So if someone was to ask you, what is the Four Noble Truths? So what do you say? We have to begin with the small. That's why I say, we begin with small. So what is the Four Noble Truths? In several words. So if someone was to say you what is the Eightfold Path, then you have to know word, you know, some terminology to say it to. As a, you know, as a practitioner, you learn, and from there you elaborate. You know, you say like, for example, you say it's the result of suffering, or the, and then the second Noble Truth is the cause, the original. Sufferings or the making of suffering. So we have to memorize by in some terminology like that. So when you practice and you say, oh, what is suffering? Then you go back. You know, the result of suffering, the making of suffering. And then you contemplate and then you go make it bigger, you know, elaborate, explain, go into detail. Then that's easy for you to practice. But if you don't remember some of the terminology, then it's hard to contemplate. What are you contemplating? Right? So you have to know something to contemplate about. So we're talking about the making of suffering. So, and then we have, then from there we ask ourselves question. As a practitioner, the Buddha, when he lived in the past, and then he started out with question, right? He sees all the suffering, right? And he asks question himself. The same thing in us, we have to ask ourselves. That's what the practitioner is. So if we don't, that's where the insight is born. Then once we have the question, then we gently slowly look into the question, and then that's, and then slowly when we contemplate, then the answer comes, you know. And then when we say about suffering, what is the cause of suffering? Then we ask ourselves that question. What is that cause? And then there's many causes, right? But that's, we have to know to ask question first. And then we have to say, what is the origin of suffering? Where it begin? You see. I have to add that question. As a student, when you do an experiment, you have to ask question, right? And what's the factor that caused this? The same thing in when we study Buddhism, we have to ask ourselves question. Because when we practice, difficult arise, right? So difficult arise, then we say, where is this difficult from? That difficulty is, where is my painful come from? You have to ask yourself that. And once we ask that and we're able to look and we calm ourselves down, you know, and we leave it there. It might be in our mind, that kind of question will be in our consciousness, maybe even our sleep too. You know, when I study, I was lecturing myself in my study, in my dream, in my sleep. You know, I was lecturing myself. I was thinking about the lecture. You know, the lecture, not just because that, what the lecture is more... effective because you contemplate, you practice, and you see what is that. We don't just talk about you when you read book. You just, you know, just refer in book, and that will not go into the heart of people.
Mm-hmm.
You have to contemplate about what you want to teach. So that's why I use normally my day of teaching. I just leave everything away and practice. And I practice. I taste it. That's first. And I ask myself, what is that? Before I share with you, not just. That's why Thai teaching is simple but effective, because he practiced. He contemplate. He lived very in a place, in a small comatose, you know, his own comatose. And whenever he after he teaches, he go back there and have time to practice and contemplate himself, the difficulty, the struggle of the Sangha, for example. And then you have experienced that. So for ourselves, we study the cause of suffering. And we have to ask ourselves that question. Sometimes we ask and we leave it there, and it's come up in our sleep. And sometimes we get the answer from our sleep. We say, ah, you realize in your sleep. And you get up and you feel very happy, very light, you know, because you see some realities in that. You answer the question being answered. Because the consciousness is working day and night. You don't know that. You know, even though when we sleep, we still think. You know, the thinking is still working there, hidden. Just like a river. You can see on the surface the river is flowing, but underneath, under the bath of the river, you know, the water keeps flowing. The same thing in our consciousness. That's why many, when people are enlightened, they contemplate one subject day and night, and then suddenly something just hit them and they realize the problem, realize the natures of their questions, the same thing. So when we study about the same thing in our suffering here, so we ask, well, what is the origin of suffering? There is craving, but where start? Where does craving start? See? We ask, where is the craving start? Where is ignorance start? How is that? So the craving or the suffering already start when many lifetimes in your life. But it's, I think it start when your parents, the conceptions of the parents. Because you, even though we are in the womb of our mothers, and the mother is also suffering, right? You know, they fight, you know, husband and wife. And why, you know, while you are in the womb, your parents are arguing, right? They have painful feeling. They have moments of struggling, moment of fears. And that is also going to transmit to you in the wombs through the umbilical, right? But you don't know that. The seed is planting, right? The seed is planting at that moment. Maybe the desire, you know, your mother, the desire for me. Desire for different desires, maybe food. So when we come out of our mother's womb, we have some kind of desire already, you know. Desire for milk, right? And that's also transmitted to our mothers, but we don't know. But maybe many other lifetimes, because in Buddhism we don't say that only this lifetime, many lifetimes we have been planting the seeds of suffering. In Buddhism, we don't just take only this life, saying that this is only my life. But, you know, that's why we are practicing. Otherwise, if you say that I only have this life, then why don't I just go out and, you know, enjoy, like pleasures, you know, and do whatever I can, you know, and then you don't care what about you, you don't care, concern about the suffering of others and suffering of yourself. But in Buddhism, we see so far, you know, so far. But doesn't mean that we just lost ourselves in that. We see that, but we plant the seeds at this moment here. So what's the cause of this moment is the result, maybe the next day, or maybe the next life. Some fruit, they bear fruit right away, but some fruit, they take years to bear fruit, right? So the same thing, you can see that. So when we study the cause of our suffering, we can look through our life, through our mother. That's why we have, many ancestors, the lineal ancestor. That being in ourself. So we contemplate and sit and calm our mind and see through it, and we see what is the cause of our cause of suffering through our mothers, to our ancestors, through our communities, through the work that we've done, you know, in the days. So the cause is many. The cause is many causes, not only one cause. In Buddhism, we don't say it's one cause alone. There's nothing one cause. There have to be many causes. Sometimes we say craving, but craving is just only one cause of our suffering. This can be our ignorance, right? This can be our delusions. This can be our wrong perceptions. So we don't say that there's only one cause of our suffering. That's many causes. But there are some like primary cause, but there's secondary cause. So at first we have to recognize the cause first. Recognize the cause. So that's why we practice to be awake, so that we can able to have the capacity to recognize that cause. So the Buddha said that once you recognize the cause, the problem already half been solved. The problem is sometimes we live in ignorance and we don't recognize the cause, and we keep accumulating, we keep putting accumulating the negative actions or negative thoughts. So the practice is able to recognize, to stop a moment and recognize that. That's why in meditations, we always we have the vipassana or samatha. Samatha is to stop or to rest our mind. I mean, that's why the basic practice of Buddhism is to stop. To stop that you're able to see. When we stop the thinking, when we stop the agitations, when we're able to see, then we slowly to find the method, the right methods to transform that. So for example, sometimes you in our life, once you walk very fast, but a moment, you try to stop and see. Stop, you will rest in your mind. Because when the physical body is running, is because the mind is running, right? So when you take a moment, a pause for a moment, then you're able to slow things down, able to see. What are you? And then you ask yourself, why am I running? You know, in different way. Running here, that's your mind. Mean here, that's your mind is running. So the more we run, and the more we don't see, right? We don't see because our mind is being disturbed, and we don't see the cause of our running. So here is we have to have the ability, the capacity to stop first, So when you go into sittings, you stop your thinking and bring yourself back. That's mine. When you stop yourself and you bring yourself back and you start contemplating, start a moment of concentration, so you can able to see the cause of suffering. What is that cause? So we have, as a practitioner, we have to have the ability to stop in a moment. You know, for example, like Tai Chi Ching, in Vipassana, that's why whenever you raise your hand, raise your feet a little bit and you stop, before you put your feet down, in Vipassana practice, everything they do, they just, like they raise their feet and they stop and they put the feet down. Because in that moment, you have some kind of calmness to see. You see why are they doing that? And when they eat, they just put in, you know, they raise a spoon of food and they raise it up and they look at it a little bit. That means they are stopping into the seat and they are, and they put it into the mouth. And then before they choose it, and for a while they stop it. And you see, why are they doing that? If you practice, you can see that because of that, a moment of stop, a moment of resting, and do stop the running. Even when we eat, sometimes we chew very fast, right? We chew very fast, and sometimes we bite our tongue. I have that many times, and so hurt, painful, huh? And it's caused many later, you know, even my mouth still pain. And because we don't aware of that. But it's the practice. Even if you eat slowly, and you enjoy the food. But when we run, we don't enjoy what is around, right? We keep like running in the future, and we don't see what is around. And we won't around here, and we don't see what is cause of our running, what is the cause of that suffering. But once we stop that, you're able to see that. Then you enjoy. Then life, that's why they say the present moment is a wonderful moment. That because you have that capacity to enjoy life. So life can be a suffering, but life can be something that is wonderful. Right? It depends on our mind. If our minds are calm, at rest, the same person. But sometimes you see them very peaceful. Sometimes you see them very agitating. Sometimes you see them and the anger is arising. Because you can look internally because at your mind is not at rest. Your body, then you see things differently. You experience that when you practice two moments in your life. Bring yourself into the practice and experience. You see, when your mind is at peace, and then you see everything is beautiful. And it's the capacity of accepting everything is much huge. But when our mind is at running, then everything becomes small, and everything becomes an obstacle, you know? You know, sometimes the shoes can be a mean for us to protect it, but sometimes it's very agitating because, you know, you put the shoe in, the shoe is very tight because your mind is there. And you think that the shoe is the cause of suffering, right? But you don't know that your mind is the cause of suffering. Agitated mind, angry mind, restless mind, that's the cause of suffering. So even sometimes our walk can be a cause of suffering too. You know, sometimes you walk, you feel that you enjoy the walk, but sometimes you don't really enjoy the walk. And your walk is become an obstacle of your walking. So we bring our practice in realities. So what is the base of our practice? So when you have this body, and the Buddha really give a concrete example, is the six sense organs is the base of our practice. Mm. And six sense objects. So it's the base of our practice. To remove. So six sense. So you know some of this terminology when you say six sense organs. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is it? Six sense objects. This is like the terminology, Buddhist terminology.
Sight, sound, smell, taste.
Touch.
Anyone knows? I know in Vietnamese, right?
Sight.
Form.
What else? So I have to test with that.
Perception. Mental formations.
Perceptions.
So you have to know what if someone says what is six sense objects.
That's right.
So this when this come into contact with this, that's causes suffering here. So that's why eyes.
Cause sight, which can be suffering.
Well,
sound, which can be suffering. Mm-hmm.
So when eyes see form is all kind, right? So you can see the beautiful woman or man on the street, and you get attached to that, right? And that's one of the causes of suffering, right? Attachment, right?
Yes.
So form, what? And then what is ear?
Sounds.
Sounds. Yes. Sounds. And what is nose? Do.
Smell.
Smell. What do his tongues do?
Taste.
What does his body do?
Touches.
Touch. And then what does mind does? Mind is difficult.
Consciousness.
Mind is the objects. What is mind do? Yeah. So the objects are phenomenon, right? Every phenomenon is the object of the mind. When you see something, right, and the mind sees something, that's the object of the mind. So when our eyes see something, for example, see here's we can turn on TV, right? And there is many advertisements, and some kind of advertisement on the TV or some kind of something that you see in forms, right? Then, but by itself, it's not causing suffering though, right? Itself, if these two not come together, right? You see, but you are not agitated by seeing. Then form is not the cause of suffering. But when these two come into contact, that I see the forms, any forms. Can see the table, but I see the table. The table is a form, right? But if you say, the table is so beautiful, right? I need to buy it. I need to possess it, right? Now the eye is coming to possess, right? That's cause of suffering. And you attach to the table. You say, you know, I have to work very hard, you know, the table is big, beautiful, this could be fit in my living room. I can invite my friend come and, you know, so my friend see I have a beautiful table, right? And then you have to work so hard. But what if you don't have the money? Right? And then try to think, no, I better, either I could steal, you know, when a kid, you know, see something very beautiful in the market, you know, and they don't have money. Right? They have eyes. They see the form. They see a school bag, for example, or some shoe is nice, you know, and they go there and fit the shoe. I don't have the money. What can I do? You know? Go home. And look around, you know, see whether in my mother's first, whether money in there, you know? Yeah. You see the first. And they, what they do. You know, if they don't ask, if you don't train them to, you know, if you want something, you ask. But the money is too big and they couldn't get it, so they don't steal, right? So that's caused suffering for themselves and for their family, right? They got caught, they went to jail, right? And involved the family, right? So by the eyes itself, if you see things and, you know, you see the nature of the air, you know, you see it's beautiful, you see the living air, it's beautiful, you know? And, you know, as a, you know, teenager, they go out, you know, boy or girl, you see beautiful girls. Ah, try to possess now. Huh? Yeah. Try to get the girl, right? And if someone was trying to descend in many, one want to possess one person, right? And they fight. That's why in gangster they fight and kill. They can kill for, you know, girls or boys, you know, for that. Eyes and forms. Because, so if as a practice, then we see the beauty, we enjoy the beauty, you know, the rose we see. For example, we see our, you know, go to the garden, you see the beautiful rose, and you say, oh, this one be good on the altar. And you gotta try to cut, you know? But if you see a beautiful, you know, you can recognize the beautiful, right? Because mindfulness is coming, you see the beautiful things, and you just leave it there, and anybody can enjoy it, you know? Walk around and enjoy it. In beautiful gardens, see the rose. But if you try to possess it, and try to cut it, and either you get caught, because you don't ask, right? And may you get nobody know, but at home later on you feel guilty. And you say, oh man, I'm stealing the robes. Okay? Stealing the robes. So then you broken the precept, stealing. Right? Yeah. So the eye and ear can cause a lot of problems too. But because of our greediness, you know, try to possess for ourselves. And so the Buddha tried to say, here for us is to practice to be mindful. You know, you see the beauty, you see the nature of beauty in everyone, and you don't try to possess for yourself, for example. And then you're free. You at the moment you're already free. You got some freedom there already. You see, you have some freedom between eyes and form already. So the practice is to be have some freedom, and you can seize the nature of it, and then you got freedom right there. But at that moment you can be. Got attachment that right away because you try to possess. The eye sees something, see house or see trees, and you put attention to that, and then that becomes a seed. And later, maybe you don't steal something right now, but because you have an intention there already, right? And later on, it will be, you know, come up again to the living room and have a strong motive push you to that direction. So you see. So if you see the flower as it is, you don't have give rise to any intentions, that will not cause any suffering to you. But if you have an intention of possessing it, there is some kind of suffering already formed in your consciousness that you might know or you might not know. But when it have a chance, it will be arise in your surface of consciousness, in your living room, in your consciousness, and it will be bring into actions. And the same thing is here in South, and you know, and you, this can be leading to, you can see something, you can listen to music and you like, right? And you pay attention, you try to possess that music, for example. If you don't have the money, you try to find any way to get it. But if you hear something is not favorable to your ear, for example, if your mother was to scold you, for example, right? And you know, it's not favorable to your ear. The ear is kind of irritating to your ear, right? And you might yell back at her, or you might do something to get away from that. So it's formed like and dislike, you know, something that... But if you hear the Dharma, then it's different. You know, the Dharma have the capacity to help you to transform, to see deeply. Then it's different. So the eye and ear and the sadhya is neutral. We say it's neutral. So when we study neutral, it's neutral.
Neutral. I think that's right.
Yeah.
But when it's come together and it's plus the attachment into it. Attachment?
What kind of attachment?
Any kind of attachment.
Okay.
Yeah, desire. The desire into it.
So the top things are completely neutral.
Yeah, the ear by itself is neutral, and the sound by itself is neutral. But when we plus the attachment to all the desire.
Both are neutral, but when they come together.
Yeah, when it comes to in contact. So
okay.
When it's coming to contact. Then if we have mindfulness, or have some awareness, then it's okay, you know? And then that's why you recognize. You recognize right away. So once you recognize that, that's why I say once you recognize it, then it's slowed down the process of attachment. So the practice is to wash out all of this here. So, and then it's the nose and the smell. You know, you go to the... shopping mall, and you go into the perfume. Some perfume smell very good, and you feel tense to that. You know, you want to buy, you know, to make the ads give. You know,
mm-hmm.
And but if you don't have the money, you don't have the things to buy it, and you will think different way to get it, to possess it. And you can smell the food. You know, when your food that you cook or your mom cook, but you don't. If it don't smell good, then you give rise to dislike, right? But if you say you can see through, you say the hard work of your mom, you say, oh, you know, whatever she cook, I eat, but not suffering. You say that you eat, but you're suffering. I do too, you know. But if you see the nature, you see that their hard labor. Then you transform. You say, you know, they try their best to cook for you, you know, and they laugh, you know. And then you remove the suffering. Sometimes your husband go at home cook and they don't know how to cook, you know. And then you go home and your face look not happy because you're so tired. You're expecting, you know, I go home. Mm-hmm. I might have some good food to eat. And have some time to relax, enjoy the food, you know. Mm-hmm. But the food, you know, on the table is not. Oh, it's not my favorite food today. So you're not happy. But if you look and see how much she had been, you know, or him or her had been spent time to cook for it, then you know, right. Well, you haven't tasted that, but you smell, right? And you see, and then you see the food. The food not really decorate, you know. The decoration is not very, you know. Look very, not very good, you know, beautiful. So you can see the eye, you can smell the food of that. And because the two things come into contact already. And so when, and even the tongue, when you sit down, you taste the food, you know, now it's become reality, you know, the food, and so on, you feel the food tastes good, and you know, your tongue tastes good, and you say, wow, you know, you could get some applause to her. But if it not tastes good, then you keep your mouth, you turn away from the table, you know. And that's why it helped cause suffering. If, but if we have some kind of mindfulness, and look deep and see, and then, you know, it's not. Because you, the, what is the purpose of eating? You know, sometimes the food tastes good, but it's, they're not healthy. And then you can go to the restaurants and they cook good and smell good. It's not healthy. We eat every day a lot of MSG. You know, put MSG to make you, you know, to trick your tongue, huh? Oh, you taste good, you know, but go home, you tea so different. You gotta head it up right after that. If I eat MSGs, I got headed right away. So my head is telling me, oh, the food have MSG in that. If you go to the restaurant, you know, you eat that and you can see. Sometimes the food tastes good but doesn't turn out good. So the purpose of eating is to, you know, to be healthy, right? So, but mostly we get tricked by our tongue.
Mm.
Yeah, tricked by our tongues. And we don't see it. We can see it's good just only a moment, but it's caused so many time of suffering, you know, a long time of suffering. You can sometimes the food you eat good, you go diarrhea. Mm-hmm. And you don't, you ask for a toilet for the whole night. So you have to see your body, how your body, you know, because you don't see the reality. We got blind by that, by what is good on the surface. So when it's come together and then we got pulled into that direction all the time. Most of, we very easy to get trapped into that. In that. So the practice is to be aware, to be awake, and to seize the reality in whatever you do. So when you have a moment of resting, a moment of calmness, you see that. So you stop reacting. You know, when you see the food not taste good right away, you react right away. We are so much fast in our reacting. So much fast in our reacting. If we see something that we don't like, right, we react right away. So the practice, that's why I say to stop a moment, you know, and calm yourself down. I see that when I practice, I see that in myself a lot. And I see something that is not really going to in accordance to what I expect, I not react, but I stop. You know, I stop. I might take a breath or walk away to calm myself down. That's the practice, is to react but slowly. Slowly react to it. Let your mind calm. Bring yourself into resting before you react. So you don't create a lot of damage. A lot of suffering. A lot of suffering. First is to yourself. Because when you react in the right way, and you you produce some kind of chemical in your body. You produce the feeling in your body right away. So, in that moment, you slow down the process of reacting. Feel your body at that moment. Especially in our family, in the family, you react so fast, you can see that. So the practice is, when the parents say something to you, when your child says something, you slow down your reacting. Whether you like or dislike, it's okay to be like and dislike. But slow down your process of reacting. Because you react in the right way, you can create a lot of damage in your feelings. That's why many family broken, because that the way of we react so fast in every in each other, to each other, when your husband says something, because your mind at that moment is not calm, it's not clear. He said, you react based on anger, based on agitations, based on restlessness. That's why we're reacting. So when we're able to do that, so when you taste something is not good, slow down the process
of reacting and see and look deep in sees. So that's the practice here. The same thing is touching. You live in the reality, in society. We do a lot of touching. You know, you touch the food, maybe you hold the hand of your loved one. You hold the hand of a baby. You shake hands with somebody. And touching create generate a feeling. Can be a feeling of liking, a feeling of attachment, a feeling of pleasance, a feeling of unpleasance. Or it can be a feeling of neutral feeling. Because when you shake somebody's hand, that if you there is no feeling of attachment, then you create a feeling there, but it's a neutral feeling. You don't attach into any feeling of pleasant. And sometimes you shake your hand, but you have a feeling unpleasant. The hand of that person can be too tight or something like that. You know, mm-hmm. Your partner. You know, so when you're very mindful, you touch someone. And once you have a feeling of pleasant, you react differently. But you react based on a feeling of attachment, if you like, right? If you touch someone you like, and you say something, that means you are reactive. But you based on that feeling of attachment. But if someone you was not like, you feel a feeling, but unpleasant feeling, and you react. If that person is too hot, then you react strongly. So when I hold this pen, I have a feeling for this pen too, but different. Because this pen is have no energy. But when you touch the people, here's the sentence means they have the energy. So you create different feelings. Different feeling when you touch. I remember when I was in Vietnam, and one of my grand teacher, he teach on this very detail, and he said this is the practice as human being. A lot of our suffering come from of this when the six things come into contact with six objects. That create a lot of a feeling. This can be a liberation, but it can be also a suffering, depending on what level of practice we are at. So this is every day. We do it every day, everywhere we go. Because we have six sense of organs, we have six sense of objects. So every day we expose to it, into this here. But if we live mindfully, then we can have a feeling, a peaceful life. But if we drown into our when six sense and six objects come together, contact together, if we live in bland, then we create a lot of suffering. Because everything we come into contact, we create some kind of attachment, some kind of all other aversions, right away. Because you can contact your eyes with your children, contact, and with your husband, right? And with your worker, if someone that you are work with, and that person is a very stubborn person, for example, and then you come to every day, and with all this, and we create a lot of negative karma when we come into contact. But if some person is very pleasant, then we can plant the seeds into it. Mm-hmm. But if we practice well, practitioner, then we create something that more space, more liberation, more freedom. Right? More freedom for that person or for that object. So we can liberate ourselves from this, but also we can draw ourselves into six sense of of objects. So the eye comes into contact with the form when we are walking. For example, we are walking in the forest. Our eyes come into contact with the nature, the forms, many trees around. It can be refreshing, right? It's going to be refreshing. So when we walk, we already have some kind of contact already. So when we sit, we feel the cushion right away, right? Some cushion is high, you know, low, whatever. You can feel that, you can touch that all right away. So this is the basic practice that we have to practice with. The Buddha, he had six sense organs, six sense of objects, but he liberated himself. But most of us here, we draw ourselves, right? We draw ourselves. But we may be in the middle, you know, in the middle, half-half, you know. Sometimes we, like, we part-time Buddha, so we part-time awakening, sometimes we are aware of our eyes, but sometimes we don't. Something is so attracting so strongly, and you are so attracted to that, and we lost ourselves in that right way. If we don't practice, draw well in our mindfulness. So what if, like, the blind person, can they practice? They might not see, right? They might not see, but the energies of the eyes will be transformed into the ear. They have very sharp ear. You can move gently, they can see that. So one of your organs is dysfunction, is the energy will be transferred into another organs. Just like light bulb, if you know, you turn off the light bulb. Well, we have six light bulb, right? We turn off one light bulb and the other light bulb will get stronger because the energy goes into that. The same thing. So if the ear, if the deaf person, they cannot hear, but they can see. But their see is more sensitive than us. And the touch, that's what they learn. So it's not that. Doesn't mean when somebody, one of the organs, it dysfunction, doesn't mean that they are not. So they suffer, other organs is suffering more, you know, when, because it's more sensitive into other organs. So we can practice all this through our, like, walking meditation is the method for us to practice, eating the way for us to practice. So we have many form of practice here to transform all this. Eating, looking, right? When you look, if we look mindfully, then our looks become a liberation look. Ears, nose, tongue. So speaking also is a practice, yeah? If we speak mindfully, then we create a lot of less suffering for us. So that's why some people, they practice noble silence. There's a practice they call noble silent practice. But maybe their mouth is not speaking, but their mind might be speaking. So, and mindful listening. So we have all kind of tools to practice. You know? The ear, the eyes is mindful looking, right? When you look, you have to be mindful what to look at. And the ear is practice deep listening. You know, sometimes you hear something. Loving speech is the practice. The nose is mindful smelling. You know? You have to be very mindful. And the tongue is mindful speaking, you know? And when you speak something, so it's all kind of practice for us here. The Buddha provides all kind of tools to practice with all this. So the body and the mind, you know, mind is here, is very, very, very broad here term. So when you speak, when we're speaking about mind, do you know what is mind mean? When we speak, but we don't really, you know, have we have a vague sense of understanding what is mind?
You have to ask. Your body is easy to understand. But what is mind? You know, you have to ask yourself. Sometimes we forget to ask that. What is mind?
What is the function of mind? Or what's the definition of mind? See? Sometimes we say mind, sometimes we say consciousness.
It's lucky that I study in your very Abhidhamma. We study, when I was in school, we called mind and this world. Yeah, mind and the objects of mind. So we discern everything that we study, we have to define the definition. What is that? So when we practice, it's become clear. We don't wait in your practice. Because when we study, we practice meditation, for example. And we say that we practice on the mind. So we have to know what is mind, the function of the meaning of mind. So when you sit down, if your mind is not clear, then it's what? It's not meditation. So we have to be clear, pure, illumination. So the mind is always bright. That's the function of mind. And new. It's always new. Every moment, constantly is new. So that way we can say purity of mind. The mind is very pure. That's why when you get into the state, you enlighten, your mind is always bright. See? That's the Buddha. He's always, he lived in this new and bright and illumination and pure all the time. 24 hours. But we live maybe sometimes in agitation. Right? So agitation, that's why it makes the mind is not clear. Right? Because when you agitate, you're not calm. Agitation. And sometimes we become anger. Why we become? Because we are not very clear of our mind. So we become anger. See, all this make the mind unpure and pollution. We think something that not very make our mind pure. Pollution. Pollution our mind by our way of thinking.
Time, may I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
So is I don't know how to phrase this, the natural state of the mind then is the clear, pure illumination. That's how it is.
That's
and then other things
mm-hmm.
cause the...
Yeah, attachment. All this pollute the mind.
Pollution,
attachment. That's why when we practice, is try to not to destroy it, but transform this attachment into non-attachment. We have many, many things that pollute the mind, not only one thing, right? But we have to, that's why when we're meditating, when we sit in meditation, we have to know what is the function, what's the nature of the mind. The nature of the mind is clear, pure, illumination, new. So when we understand the definition, then we put into application, then it's easy. When you sit down and you're thinking a lot, you say, oh, it's not. It's not what is I supposed to do. And the object of the mind is what? Is everything around it. Everything that we see is become the object of the mind. That's what we call phenomena. Everything we come into contact with the mind. Everything is around us. So do any of you have any questions that what I was discussing about the six sense of object and the sense of organs?
One book we read, Zen Mind, I forget what the title of that one was. Zen Physics. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of its points that it summarized was is that our minds are all a function of remembering. Mm-hmm. If you didn't remember anything, you know, it would be clear, it would be pure. You wouldn't have any attachments because our, you know, our egos and everything is based on what we remember and what we want to think of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they can prove that what you remember isn't exactly what happened. You remember what you want to remember.
Yeah.
And so I think that fits in with this, is that, mm-hmm. you know, agitation, anger, pollution, attachment, you know, memory is another thing that goes yeah. in with there. Yeah. If you don't have memory, mm-hmm. It's a lot easier to be clear or pure.
I think memories, we have to go into when once you remember something, but it's like things natural, it's calm, right? It's arise, and it's calm, and then it cease. So you can have a memory of your mom or someone else, but the matter is you try to attach to that or not. See, if the memory can become anytime, you can sit here and you can think something. But once you attach to that and just skip, like, just keep like memory, you know, skip that up, then it's become a problem. But sometimes you need to remember something to do the work. But once you remember and you work and let it go, right?
So, Ty, what would that look like if you were attaching to a memory? So you remember, like, okay, I remember my dog. Mm-hmm. And then it would be fine to just remember her and how she was. But then you think, oh, I wish she didn't die. I'm so sad.
Then
is that what it would be? Like,
yeah.
Attachment? Okay.
Your attachment to that.
Okay.
And but if you keep going with attachment, then it becomes some kind of illness already.
Mm-hmm.
Well, isn't the first step of attachment judging? Like, you either judge it positive or negative.
Mm-hmm.
So if you judge it positive, you want to attach to it. And if you judge it negative, you want to avoid it.
You can be negative. You can be remember it because you hate it. You know, somebody, for example, you hate, but it keep coming, mm-hmm. right? And you should keep attached. But the matter is, if you're able to let go or not. You know, it can be positive. It can be negative. Sometimes the more negative, you remember it more because you hate so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just become obsessive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And but sometimes you can be obsessive with positive too, you know, because you love someone so much and they become obsessions.
Mm-hmm.
Or you hate someone so much and become obsessive. You keep bringing up the memories of that person, whether it's negative or positive. So it's disturbing the mind. Okay, Steve.
I had an interesting incident that happened that I guess I didn't realize until what had actually happened until talking about this. I had a student who I hadn't seen all summer, and I haven't actually taught this student for a year, and it's a very difficult student. And this student takes a lot of energy and a lot of extra work, and immediately when he saw him in my class, I got a feeling of,
oh,
here we go, it's going to be, and then I was able to, I stopped, and said, well, let's give him a chance, and, you know, let's try to help him. So that was interesting, because I obviously had a very strong attachment to a feeling of dealing with this kid that, in the past, it's just from seeing him day one, and he was pleasant and kind and smiling, and I saw him, and I just, it was a click. that was
you bring back memory.
That whole process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if someone clunked you over the head and you had amnesia and you like didn't know who this person was, you wouldn't have any preconceived, mm-hmm. like,
right.
Oh man, this is going to be tough.
That's right.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so it can be a good memory or can be a bad memory. So the click is, when it's calm, you have able to recognize it and let it go. So today I would like to emphasize some point here. So you should remember some of the terminologies. So when you practice, you bring it up easily. For example, I just say, you say, my. And when you practice, you say my, you know exactly what my is. And then it's easy to contemplate.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't know what my is, then how can you contemplate something? You see? And if you sit was to sit in meditation, you don't know what my, and then a lot of agitation come, and you let just, it's overwhelm your whole time of sitting in meditation. Maybe. But if you say, oh, it's not. It's not what I'm supposed to do, you know. But you just see it and let it subside by itself. So to understand it first and then put into application is easier. So if you say, oh, what is the first noble to me? You say, the result of suffering, the suffering. And you know what exactly it is. Then when you practice, it becomes much easier. Because you clear what it is, you see what it is. And then the practice will become very effective. So that's why we study first, then we sit. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, understand it first. So you understand the cause of suffering, then you, when you go into the meditation hall, you put up the question, you say, this, what is the cause of suffering? And you know what is exactly the cause of suffering. And you see clearly, which is the function of it, then it's very effective to put the cause of suffering into practice. And then the practice become much easier while you are sitting. So if you don't understand what it is, ask right away. I might not share with you right away because I'm not an expert in some of the terminology, but I say that, or at least you ask the question, raise me the question, and so the next time I can, you know, do some research or contemplate that, I can answer it to you, and then it's make the study, make the practice much clearer, much easier for you, and I think it's also. And last time I talked about unconditional love, and I have discussed with Cindy, and conditional, and see, your question is,
you said that you're looking for conditional love, and I said, why would anybody look for conditional love? People look for unconditional love. They don't look for conditional love. I don't know if you remember how you said that. Last and I time. Didn't understand that part.
Yeah, and she bring that question to me, and then I make it clear, because if you have the more you look for unconditional love or conditional love outside, then you never satisfy. But the unconditional have to be within in you in order for me to connect with you.
So you mean love for yourself?
Yeah, the unconditional have to arise within you. The Buddha have the unconditional love, but you have to have the unconditional love. You bring that up, the unconditional love. You investigate the unconditional love in you in order for me and for you to connect, to connect, because there's two energy, electric here, can connect. But if we just look for conditional love outside, and then we can never fulfill that or content that. So you have to have the unconditional love in you. It's in you, but we don't know how to discover it. So the Buddha showed us the method to discover, to go back and discover that unconditional love in you. Once you have that unconditional love, then you're able to connect to anyone else around you. Much easier. Can be your children, can be your partner, can be your friends, can be your enemy. So when I say something that you are not unclear, just question. I'm always willing to giving a challenge for you or for me. So if you know, sometimes my English is not really fluently, so it's my speaking can cause. I might understand it, but because of my language, I cannot express clearly to you. So you have to raise the question right away, or you can write it down and ask me some other time. If you feel that that's not the right time to ask me, you can write it down and say, this is what you're talking about, but I'm not unclear, so can you explain to me? I might can help you answer you right away, but I might not answer you right away. But if you ask, we have to be responsible with each other understanding. So it's make things clear. So today I say something that six organs and six objects of six sense objects. If you don't understand, or you can go home and practice and you come up with some confusions, then come and ask. You know, that's what we come together to share. I'm a practitioner and you also a practitioner. Every one of us have the responsibility to contemplate and to share with each other. It doesn't mean I sit here, I speak, and everything I speak is right, you know. You have to, because I speak based on my experience, based on my understanding. But some of my understanding might not be fitting you. So But you have the opportunity to ask and to challenge me so I can improve myself. You know? I don't care to... I can make mistakes. I know that I miss making mistakes, you know, when I interact with people. But I'm willing to accept my mistake and improve myself. I think that's is what learning for. What is the meaning of learning is to willing to accept what is we don't know, so we are willing to open and learn and study. So if as I speak, if you have any unclear understanding or any confusions or any terminology that you don't feel comfortable with, I'm always open for questions. So thank you very much for your listening. So we will listen to the bell and to conclude our sharing today.